The Muskie 360 Podcast is brought to you by Yeti, built for the wild, Evinrude E-Tech Outboards, Joe Bucher Outdoors, the number one name in Big Fish products, and The Muskie Shop.
Oh my God, we're trapped, man.
It's the Muskie 360 podcast, another quarantine edition here. We're just letting out some angst there.
I'm glad to be here, though. It's, you know what? Throughout all of this, man,
yes,
there is certainly one thing that stays on my mind, and that is looking forward to a fishing season. I think I speak for probably everybody that listens that, hey, at the end of the tunnel, there's a little bit of light. And I think, you know, talking about it on the podcast certainly helps.
So. Absolutely. Keep your head up. Get ready for it.
You have to. We're all in this together, man. From a knowledge standpoint, and from a we're hanging in there, and we're you know.
It's been one, like me and you have talked a couple times, and like this is sort of the week everybody's sort of freaking out a little bit, at least in our circle of friends.
Yeah, because you got the extended shelters going on, and there's a lot of, you know, boat launches closing. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of uncertainty as to, you know, people's Canadian trips, people's just trips in general. I know as guides, you and I, everybody's really uncertain on so many levels.
Yeah.
And,
it's been a bloodbath, but got to stay positive. Got to focus on the
really
good
do.
Stuff, man. Got to focus
Absolutely,
on it.
Man.
Me and the guru were talking on the phone the other day and he was all bummed out. He said, you know, what if we don't go to Canada? You know, what if we don't do that? And I said, we're going to figure something else out. You know,
we have to. I've been researching so many different, you know, different bodies of water in my neck of the woods in Wisconsin and Michigan. And, you know, we're talking stuff in Tennessee. You and I talked about stuff in Washington and all these really, really neat fisheries around the country that I think, you know, again, we can go on a tangent here, but I mean, I think, you know, obviously the U.S. has some just unbelievable waters that we can explore if, you know, we can't go to Canada. And, you know, it's like, I'm excited for the adventure to come.
Absolutely, you know? So, man. And it just, that's the thing I tell everybody, we're going through the same thing. The stuff you're sitting around and thinking in your head, we're thinking the same stuff and it sucks.
Oh, yeah.
But we're, you know, once we know what's going on and once everybody gets a bearing on it, you know, we'll try to dial in and help you on whatever the situation is. Me and you've talked though, sometimes, man, whatever water you can get on that home water, man, this might be the year to just learn the crap out of it and master some stuff.
Exactly. I mean, I honestly, and without going too far down that hole, you know, it's like, I've been thinking of my own water on the Three Lakes chain. It's amazing. You know, there's, you know, 7,600 acres there. So it's not a, you know, it's a decent sized body of water for my neck of the woods.
Yeah.
And I've been fishing it since I was a kid. And it's like, I'm still blown away by how much there is to learn, even on a water of that size. It's like, then you factor in new technology with side imaging and you start learning things, you start getting ideas and you start really tweaking your home body of water.
Absolutely.
And it's really a beautiful thing when you take that, you know, that, you know, perspective, like you just mentioned, Steven. I think it's really cool.
Well,
so
keep your head up and we're going to make somebody's day here in a second, because on the last podcast, everybody, we had a good chuckle. Chaz had a dinner date with Nan, if you remember that. Me and Joe were giving him the bag of guff there. But what I did is I appreciate everybody that left a 5-star review on the app. At the Apple store, on the Apple iTunes store. It's just appreciated, man. It just helps us get out to more people.
So
what I did to keep it nice and easy and make sense, I literally printed them out, cut the names out, dropped them in a hat, and I pulled a winner. So the winner of the steal from Joe Bucher, stealing from Bucher's stash. And by the way, don't get disappointed if you didn't win. We're going to do this a bunch. But the winner is John Anderson. So John.
Woo! John.
Shoot me an email. You're going to send me your address. Joe Bucher is going to send you an autographed bait or two and get it out to you.
Oh, man, that's awesome.
I know, but Chaz, there were so many just awesome letters. You guys sent awesome letters into us, reviews and all this stuff.
And honestly, I mean, I know I speak for the both of us. So like it makes my day when
it does.
When, and I haven't even, and I apologize to anybody listening that if I haven't gotten back to your notes, I'm trying to keep up. Like, it's amazing.
Yeah.
The outreach from everybody. It's just incredible. I can't, you know, it's just, it really makes my day when I read those reviews and comments and emails. It's unbelievable.
We love it. And it just keeps us motivated. I mean, trust me, we're sitting around as depressed as you are right now.
Oh, I know.
I've been drinking Pepsi since 3 o'clock. For all you, all our Pepsi buddies out there, I've got your emails. Let me know how many Pepsis you've had today. Chaz has been into the Pepsis. I know that. And, but anyway, there were so many cool like emails we got from that contest and everything. Junior's Inlines, I'm going to give away. They're a cool sponsor of ours. It's a little like mom and pop company out of Minnesota. I'm going to send out a couple of those. So you've seen them in like my bait mod videos. I'm going to send out one of those
to badass.
Rhett Palmer. Rhett, you left a review, and it says a must-have for serious muskie anglers. Rhett, I know you've asked questions on the podcast before. Send me an email at the app. We'll talk back and forth, and I'll get you a Junior's Inline out your way. And also,
congrats.
Another one that was really cool, and I drew them out, man. We're just going to do the top three essentially right now. So the third place one is Bob Kleinworth. Bob, you left a really cool review there, and I drew you out of there. Shoot an email over to the app. I'll get you a bait out there. We'll get them sent out. We're going to do some fun stuff like that down the road just to keep everybody
Steven,
motivated.
This is awesome, man, because we got a great family here at Muskie 360.
Dude, we have so many freaking listeners. People, we can't thank you enough. Me and Chaz are just like,
it's
the podcast wasn't even like the original idea of the app. Me and you were sitting around and we're like, I think we're a couple Pepsis deep, and went, we ought to do a podcast, you know?
Yeah. So, we did our first one and we're like, people listen to this?
People what? Right? Pathetic. but Bob, send me an email, and Rhett, we'll get some Junior's Inlines out to you. We're going to do another big giveaway from the Book Daddy himself, from Booker's Secret Stash. That's
exciting.
But the other cool thing is this. So the other day, we did a question from a dude named Charlie, right? Do you remember this question? It was the guy, we were trying to figure out where he's at. And he had gone like 57 hours.
And I remember this vividly.
Yeah, and so listeners, if you haven't heard it, it's in the last one of the Q&As me and Chaz did. We got an email from Charlie that said he broke the streak.
This is so awesome.
The day after the podcast. And so what I did is I actually got in touch with Charles, and I'm going to punch that in right here. You can hear it right now, folks. All right, so I've got Charles on the line. How you doing, Charles?
Good. How are you, Steven?
Doing good, man. I'm doing good. So your original question you sent in the podcast, you said, all righty, so I'm on a 57-hour dry spell, 54 hours casting, 3 hours trolling. You said you've been picking your spots. You've been picking all this stuff. And you sent a message into the app today, and something happened, dude. Tell all the listeners what happened today.
I went back to basics. I listened to what the pros said.
Thank you.
I did everything they said. I hugged the shoreline tight. I used a depth raider walleye.
Nice.
Six inch guy.
yeah. The little baby and, depth raider.
Yeah.
And important above all else, you broke the streak.
Yeah, it was ugly, man.
You got a muskie in the net, dude. Muskie fishing's ugly business, but you did it, dude. You did it. You got one in, so you can reset the timer. And, you know, it sort of goes to show me, and you talked like right before I hit the record button about, you know, you'd been hearing in the area you're at, everybody's telling you the fish are doing one thing, and you proved today that they were doing something different.
You know? Yeah, it was the thing about it was it was very muddy water. So, I mean, obviously the clarity wasn't good, so they couldn't see it, but in the water temperature actually dropped a lot.
Uh-huh.
So it was lower than what it was. It up to 57, and then now it's down to like 50 to 49.
Yeah, it's
so,
been you're in Ohio, right?
Yes.
I mean, because it's been, even down here, we've had a nasty cold snap this week, but, you know, that just goes to show, like, you nailed that fish trolling today, and that's like, you know, when conditions sort of suck, just trolling that baby depth raider, hugging that shore and just banging. What kind of speed were you doing?
I was at 2.8, I believe.
Nice. Right in sort of that sweet spot. Sort of, were you sweeping in or just going straight? We're like sort of.
I was kind of switching it up.
Man, now I've got to ask you one thing, because you did write an email and you got to tell the story. who stole your boat trailer?
Man, I wish I could tell you that. It was the I don't know.
Tell the story biggest. To the listeners. This is awesome. He wrote this in an email, guys. We're gonna punch this into an episode. So Chaz is hearing this for the first time. So lay it on everybody. What happened here?
So basically what happened is me and my dad decided to go half on a boat.
Mm-hmm.
I traded my old bass boat in, and he's gonna use the boat for hunting. I'm gonna use the boat for fishing.
Right.
I got it for 2 days. I go down to Leesville the first day. Nothing.
Right.
Go out to West Branch the second day. My buddy's on the phone the whole time. He doesn't even know what he's doing. I'm just out there with someone. He's texting some girl the whole time. All of a sudden, I got a 46 incher in the net. Bam,
nice.
Done.
Nice.
So I'm like, perfect. Big PB at the lake.
Yeah.
And I get back to the launch and I look over and I look at the truck and trailer gone.
If you've got this guy's trailer, like Liam Neeson, he's gonna hunt you down and kill you. Okay.
It was terrible, the worst part,
I can't imagine coming back and your entire trailer is gone. So
the Rangers at the lake I was at were on duty, and they told me, they're like, because they were standing, they were probably 100 yards away, and they're like, I've never seen anybody look so confused in my whole entire life.
no joke, man. Yeah. Congratulations on breaking your streak, man, and thank you so much for your support of the app, and I hope we helped, and I hope you catch a bunch more, man.
Absolutely. I enjoy listening to you guys every week. It's awesome, and I will continue to do so.
All right, man. You have a good one.
You too, Stephen. Thank you.
Chaz, what did you think of that, man? Holy cow.
Dude, I mean, this is why we guide.
Yeah.
This is why we do the podcast. This is why Muskie 360 is here. Because
absolutely.
It's helping folks, in this case, break the streak, catch a muskie on a body of water that had been tough on them. And it's like, how exciting is that, that they were able, you know, Charlie was able to take some tips from our podcasts and our, you know, just squawking at muskie talk and make it happen. Like that's amazing,
man. If nothing else, you know, and it's not like, oh, you know, it's because of us, but at least, man, we're a good foil for you to just get a head change. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely, man.
You know?
Absolutely.
And Charles was a super cool dude, you know, and we appreciate all you listeners, man. That's just so cool, man. Just so cool.
It really is. It's just incredible.
You know, we're having... we're just having such a hoot with this, man, and so
I look forward to rolling these podcasts, man. It's really enjoyable. It's the creativity and the questions and the diverse, like, just range of scenarios that are on the table. It's so really exciting to talk about. And then, like you said, when a guy like Charles goes out and bangs one and reports back to the Muskie 360 community, I mean, that's just awesome. So
speaking of report back, before we get into the Q&A questions, a user, his handle is 8CaptainRedbeard8, right? He wrote a review of the app, and it says Muskie 360 and chill, which is just, I don't know about that, man. My wife will not go for the Muskie 360 and chill. Netflix and chill has worked a couple times for me, but he says he loves the podcast, and he said he really got into it during the quarantine and all that stuff, but he talks about his 9-year-old just nailed a big PB. He got a 47 incher, is 30 pound plus, just a monster here. Anyway,
he says that's amazing.
He loves the podcast, and he talks about, he loves listening to you, but he said he loves you even more because he knows you're a Bears fan. Right.
Oh, yeah,
and in this message, he's trying to name his son's fish. So Chaz Martin is the muskie naming just master. He is the sensei of muskie names. What should Captain Redbeard name his son's fish? What should they name it, Chaz? It is a 47 Boy. Inch 9-year-old caught it, so it's a monster. 47 inch 30 pounder. What's its name?
Tank.
There it is, folks. Thank you very much. That's what you tune in for. Tank.
I mean, that sounds, you know, if a nine-year-old caught a 47 inch 30 some pound muskie,
it's a tank.
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 Man. I mean, I haven't seen a photo yet. I really would love to see a picture.
Absolutely.
Of
this. I'm sure they'll send it to the user section of the photos, man.
I can't
wait
to see
it.
And congratulations
on Tank.
That's incredible, Tank, man. Tank. That's my first thought.
Have we ever talked about, maybe we did on the podcast or something, did I ever talk to you about Ditka?
No.
My brother got a 56. It's a giant on a post giant jackpot. And it's this island. We named it Mustache Island, right? And so
can't go wrong with that.
Can't go, because it looks like a mustache. But the fish, because we call it the mustache, we ended up naming it Ditka. Because, like...
Oh, my God.
Of anybody, you know, of any famous mustache back in the day. That was years and years and years ago. But, you know, when Mike Dick, it was probably more pertinent.
I don't think Muskie 360 wants to see my mustache photos. Dude. I mean, if they want to see Chaz Martin with a mustache, comment in and I'll send a photo to Steven.
Bro, but, how about this? When we film together, once this, we're going to do it. Everybody,
you want to do stashes?
It's gonna be. Here's what I'm thinking. There's a Gander Mountain commercial of Booker, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I sent this to him one day, and he cringed. He's wearing those softy shorts. Remember those, like those super thigh high? We should do like vintage musky fishing video where we have.
Dude.
Let's wear shorts, mustaches, and fish with mono.
There is a FWJP episode. This was years ago when, you know. God, this might have been 5 years ago, and I was wearing shorts on a Lake of the Woods trip with Joe. And this is, I mean, it's like, I think it's called the Beach Bruiser. For anybody out there, want to Google, go on Joe's YouTube and check it out. And it is the epitome of why you don't wear shorts on national broadcast television.
No,
I look like a loser. Oh my God. I'm looking at this, I'm like, are those my legs?
Is that what other people are saying?
This is terrible. I'm like, and now people always ask me, why do you wear pants? Go a couple years back on Joe Booker YouTube and you'll see why.
Dude, I'm saying we can't chicken out.
No,
super short shorts, mustaches, trucker hats, like literally this thing. I'll try to find it for the thumbnail. It is Booker wearing green shorts, a green polo, and a green hat.
I need to see, not just want, I need to see this,
It is on YouTube. It's an ad from Gander Mountain. He says, oh, you know, pros like me shop at Gander Mountain, eh?
You have got to be kidding me right now.
Oh, it's epic.
Exists right now.
He's got a pistol grip. It's in a John Gillespie. It's a commercial. Somebody filmed a Gillespie Waters and Woods.
I am going to give him
TV.
So much crap for this.
It's epic. He's fishing with a pistol grip. It's so like 1980s. It's amazing. But I think when me and you film, we should recreate that one day. What do you think?
Oh, yes.
Just soup, the Booker stash, the puff trucker hat, short shorts. Monofilament, at least we have to, like, we ought to just go like old school, like we should go fishing.
Okay, so you're getting me, so here's, I want to throw this out there, Steven. So this is an idea that my buddy Mike Richardson and I came up with a while ago, and I think we're going to do this season. We can do it, or I don't know, I'm throwing this out there just for food for thought, kind of a fun idea. We're talking about a grandpa's musky rod challenge, and here's the only asterisk is that we can spool it up with Beast Braid, but you have to use the original reel, the original pull stick rod,
one, baby.
All of the old school shit. Excuse me, can we edit that out? And
Chaz Martin said shit. Oh no.
But anyway, Grandpa's Musky Rod Challenge. Go out there and fish a full day and try to catch a musky.
Gotta do it. Because
how cool would that be?
I've got literally, I'm sitting here in my podcast battle station here in the studio. I have a stack of rods I've mentioned before. Most of them are unusable, but you know, I've got a Head and Pal musky rod. And I mean, literally, we can't do a complete grandpa challenge because I have my grandpa's Head and musky gaff. So
I got the gaff too, man. I've got,
dude, people don't talk about that.
Well, we could if we were pike fishing, maybe a catching
but
crook. But
that would be epic because, like, Number one, I'm in an astute advantage because I basically fish those same reels. Thank you very much.
I know you do. I mean, you know, half spool and all
half
the,
spool.
Know.
Yeah, no, I mean that would be super cool. So we need to brainstorm about just doing something ridiculous. We're gonna get into the questions.
Let's do it.
What you guys tuned in here for? First one up is Steve. I did not submit this question. There is more than one Steve in the world. I just learned that today. He says, "Hey guys, I'm a huge fan of the podcast and everything musky fishing you guys are involved in. Thank you. Oh, I live near the Wisconsin-Illinois border and fish a small trout-like stream. It's spring-fed. I pull out pike most of the time, but have caught a few muskies and have seen a few 40-inchers. I have issues trying to catch fish during post-rainstorm conditions when the current is running fast. To give you a better picture of the stream, I can wet weight it in any conditions as it doesn't get any deeper than 5 feet on the bends. Any idea how I could pull fish out in heavy current conditions?" Absolutely.
Well, Steven, because Steven Paul, you are the guy to answer this question.
Well, being
a river fisherman, I mean,
West Virginia growing up, we called ourselves creakers. How redneck is that? We're just a bunch of creakers, boys.
That's cool, man.
But the thing is you can pull some good fish out of that. I mean, when it's fast current, I actually did a vlog on rivers. Here on the app, and this would apply, Steve. You know, just micro sizing everything, it's all the same. But when we're talking fast water, and I fish like the New River in West Virginia, which is class A rapids or however they categorize those rapids, it's fast and there are muskies in it. What I would do is you got to think like trout. Okay. So it's about holes. It's about rocks. It's about anything that will create little pockets of slack water that they can lay in and wait on, right? One thing that people don't realize, when current increases, fish will go down and hug the bottom. If their body is touching the bottom, it reduces their drag in the water, which means they expend less calories trying to stay in the current.
Dude, this gets back to science to catch more fish. Like,
yep.
I love where you're going with this, man.
And you got to think what we've talked about on the podcast before. Muskie's decisions are based on caloric risk, caloric reward. Where can he hang out and feed himself while expelling the least amount of energy while doing so? So you've got to find those what slack you can. If it's,
now, Steven,
yes, sir.
Is a river expert. What do you now? Here's my
I use that term loosely.
I fish flowages where I have current, mm-hmm. but I do not. So I mean, I'm just saying myself, right. I don't actually spend a ton of time on rivers. Here's a question I have, and maybe the other Steve has this question is. So when the water's high, I think is the question mentioned. How does that affect you? I know that affects water clarity when you get a lot of runoff. Like, how does that affect impact your decision as far as what you're doing when you have clarity changes on a very short, you know, short timeline, right? Dude, I mean, you could have like 3 days and all of a sudden you're going from clear to totally brown and clouded up. You know?
I talk about in that vlog. I'm not trying to get people to watch the vlog, but it's like the same point. What I'm saying is like your decisions, all my decisions in a river or in heavy current are based upon not what baits I want to throw, what baits will work in those conditions. Right. So let's say scenario one, and this is usually what happens. If you think about it, when a river rises, right, here's what's screwy about rivers. It's generally post-frontal. So the day that it's raining, the river is rising, but the worst day is actually the bluebird sky day is the fastest flow day. And so in your brain, you're going, man, it's over. You know, the pressure's changed and all this stuff. And maybe
it looks weird.
And you've got heavy current. It's a river, so you got to throw all that lake crap out the door. Right. I'm actually in heavy current. I'm fishing aggressive. These fish, people will freak themselves out and go, the current's moving too much. It's too much for you. These things live in water.
I'm going to say from my flowage experience, this is one of my top secrets, and I shouldn't even give this away on air right now.
I'm taking notes.
One of my top secrets for fishing, you know, chains of lakes, when you've got those, just so you said, it's post-frontal. It's all that high water and heavy current. Now, I say heavy current because in my waters, when it rains, we do have more current when they open the dams. I focus. on the areas of highest current. I'm going to neck downs. I'm going to areas where I've got water movement, and that's where these muskies gravitate toward. Do you find, obviously, a much more extreme version of that on rivers?
Like, I do. And the thing is, this is when I'm faced with heavy current, right? And you've got to consider, like, if he's fishing this, it sounds like he's fishing from the bank and stream and stuff. It's the same as a boat. It's, lures are only going to work for so long. At a certain point, they're just taken off to the side. It's like you have to become, to be a good river fisherman for muskies, you have to be a good trout fisherman. I hate to say it, but it's a fact.
That's cool, though.
It's the same thought of when I'm fly. It's the only other thing I do is I actually talking to you about this. I will.
Yeah, you were talking to me the other day. I'll fly fish for rainbow.
I'm insane. I'll fly fish for muskies the whole bit. But what you're trying to do is you're trying to drop that presentation into a narrow window. That's all we're trying to do while we're casting for these things. So heavy current. What I'm doing is I'm looking for heavy baits that'll get down. Now, the thing is this, you got to gauge your current based upon how fast it is and your lure actions, and I'll take a little bit of dialing in playing with it. But, I mean, if it's, like, ripping fast, you're limited to, like, bulldogs and slop masters and stuff. That's it.
Now, I mean, I got to say, though, because in the trout world, though, I know enough about trout because, boy, if your line ain't laying right, those fish ain't going to eat it, man. There is, I guess what I'm getting at is even in the musky world, I guess I would ask you as our river expert here, is there, I guess what I'm getting at is in the trout world, if your fly is floating too quickly, or if you're hanging the fly up and it's floating too slow, they won't eat it. So does the same thing apply in the river scenario where you have to really replicate the speed of what your prey would look like in the current, which is kind of a cool idea.
For me, it's not, the speed is not so much because actually, it matters, but it doesn't matter quite as much. What I think
is more, I'm just curious to know.
Yeah,
myself,
what I think
too,
is more more important than anything is casting accuracy. That vlog, I talk about it a bunch because, heavy current. Here's the scenario. The fish is laying upstream. He's facing upstream, and he's going to be behind a rock, or he's going to be behind a piece of wood, or he's going to be kind of behind some kind of obstruction or something that creates slack water so he can lay there, right? Mm-hmm. He's laying one direction, so the way he is facing is the way that he expects something to be coming towards him. And so what matters more so in a river and heavy current is that your bait is coming in a natural way towards the cover you expect the muskie to be on. He has an expectation where his food's coming in as far as direction. The current will dictate speed. You've got to deliver it into the pockets and holes, just like a trout.
Hey, dude, amen to that. I'm going to say on my end, like I'm thinking of a spot inside my, I'm thinking of a spot that people overlook. And the way I think actually a lot of people overlook like neck downs and current areas.
Yes.
Because classically, what's kind of neat about this in my area, Wisconsin, is they're all areas with buoys and hazards and people. It's kind of funny. They actually took me a long time.
Oh,
I'm kind of
going
on a mini tangent right now, but it took me a while. As a kid to kind of get over this like mindset of like casting around buoys is awesome. Actually, it's not like stupid because you have this like, there's buoys here. I shouldn't be here. It's hazardous. And it's like,
do you know what I call those free? I call those free spots.
Right. And it's like, people don't like,
they avoid
them. I'm probably going off, but I guess just to your point that it's like the corners are what I'm thinking of is because obviously in these neck downs, the water is pushing out.
I'm laughing, Chaz.
Well, I don't know
I just pre-read the next question.
Okay. So, all right. Let's get to it. I'll finish my statement. real quick. All I was going to say is, like you said, and I think this, honestly, I think we really tackled this question probably about as well as we could. That I'm looking when I'm casting on my flowages with current, it's the corners off of the neck downs where they're just out of the strong current. But like you said, they're probably pointed in the direction of it and anticipating the prey coming out and kind of probably being bewildered. Mm-hmm. They're coming out of the high current and they're going to pick them off.
Absolutely. I think you're spot on. We got to get to this next question.
Okay, we got to go.
I read it and I'm dying. Howard. Howard asks, do you guys drink or smoke on the boat? Question mark. Sounds like you two retards would.
That is hilarious, Howard.
Smoke what, Howard?
Who wants
smoke
to go?
What?
Who wants
cigarettes?
To go
not me.
Who wants to go first? I can jump in if you want to.
I don't smoke cigarettes, I'll tell you that much.
I'll
as far as drinking,
end,
I don't drink on the boat just for safety, though.
Oh my God, dude. I have like a hard rule, and it's not even ever hard to hold myself to it. Like I have like my buddies, like I'm with my buddies. Absolutely, man. Crack a beer. Clients, I'm a little, I have like, I guess I'll just say there's just unspoken yet spoken about rules where like,
oh, guide,
you
know,
can, you can kick
no.
back and have a beer or two, but when we're, I mean, cause so I'll just say from a guide's perspective or a captain's perspective, like my, mm-hmm. even when I'm out by myself, I never drink, on the water because first of all, it's like, I'll say this. I have a gazillion things to say, but I'll end it with this. Golf, people that claim they get better at golf when they drink are liars.
Lying.
Or, and the reason they're getting better is because they realize how bad they are when they drink. Their muskies are hard enough to catch
hard
when
enough.
They're sober.
Yep.
And it's like factoring alcohol into the hardest freshwater fish to catch. No thanks. And plus, and that's just even outside of the safety perspective of, you know, when I'm doing my thing, you know, it's like you always have to have the utmost respect for Mother Nature and the realization of, even though you know your area well, never factor in alcohol into that whole scenario.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think it's funny is you, because I obviously people can tell you and I are probably the most two of the most laid back guys. We love you and I like to have a good time. Let's just
say
that.
Absolutely.
But there's hard lines.
It's just do your drinking and your smoking when you're doing something else.
Exactly. Yeah,
smoke your cigarettes somewhere else.
Yeah, you know. Moving on that one, I'm pretty serious on the water.
What's the point if you're not taking it serious? I mean, if I'm going to be out there drinking and smoking on the boat, I might as well be crappie fishing. Ryan asks, should I be keeping a fish log? If so, what kind of information should I be making notes of? Lures, water temps, wind direction? That's a great question.
That is a great question.
I'll tell you flat out, that's what I do. As far as stuff that I know is water temperature, what lures I threw that day, wind directions, like he's saying, the majors and the minors. Do you want to notate any fault? Just like, gosh, man, that's how I've done everything. I'm sure you do the same thing. Like, what are your highlights of note keeping?
Oh God, I've gone like full circle on so many things. So I used to do video recordings every single night. Every day, you know, and like that. And then I would I've got old logs that are on paper and notebooks. I've got them on the computer and Word docs. Honestly, now I don't, because everything for me though is a little different, I guess. It's everything is recorded on video now. So for me, like if I have it's there. So I mean, like I have like myself telling myself on video, you know, and I can look back in time and look at these different scenarios. And what I guess I'd say one last thing on the filming end, what's really neat, and I've noticed this as I edit footage, is reflecting on it and watching it happen. And you see things as an editor that you didn't realize, even though we, you know, I'm like keen on what the hell's going on. I see shit when I'm editing that I'm like, wow, like that's really cool. I didn't even realize it. Or that's probably why I caught that fish. And, you know, so, but I think in some way, shape, or form, no matter how you do it, I think keeping records of it is really important.
Because, if you're serious about it, absolutely.
Yeah, because it's fun. I wish I had kept like I wish personally I'd kept a written log that I could look back 10 years. I guess I have stuff when I was younger.
Right.
In the last 5 years, I haven't kept a written log because, like, honestly, and I know you know this, when you're guiding. And you're doing like, you're on like day 25 in a row or something. You're like, you're kind of in zombie mode. You don't have time for anything. You need to sleep.
Do you know what I do though, man? I actually forced myself because I'm very diligent about that record keeping.
Yeah, see, this is okay, cool, man.
And I get zombified, but I force myself. So I've got like this hatch in my Jeep. I've got a Jeep Cherokee, big old trail mm-hmm. hawk thing, and the front is like this little sunglasses holder. And so when I go to put my sunglasses on before every trip, I swap it out for a journal. And so
at the end of the, when
I go to put my sunglasses away so I don't lose these retardedly expensive sunglasses, I have to pick that journal up and I force myself, it's got a pen in it, and I'll scribble down, you know, cold front, you know, phantom, depth raider, you know, just the highlights or whatever, whether I struck out or not. So at least I've got the basics of here was the weather pattern, here was what was going on. And not to go back to that, like that vlog, but if we're talking river fishing, you know, I know that drift, so I can actually go that day, go, okay, it's like a 3-mile-hour drift, blah, 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 make my notes. And so I'm forcing myself to at least take 30 seconds to write that stuff down every day. It is a million times what has happened is I've gone back to that once I've got on a really strong bite, right, and gone, uh-oh, I was missing something these other days. So I think it's a powerful tool. Force yourself to do it. You know, if he wants to know what to document, document the weather, document the wind, document whether it happened under a major or minor, what lures you were using, what the conditions were, what the water clarity was. And that's at least enough to start seeing patterns because, you know, if you want to see long-term patterns, you want to see factual information.
Well, and I want to say one other thing that we didn't. I'm sure you and I are obviously both thinking the same thing. But the biggest thing that I found myself looking back to, I remember when I first was, you know, you'd have a tough day on the water, and you're like, man, like what? Like a year or 2 years ago, when I had a great day, what the heck was I doing? Mm-hmm. And what I find most, And this goes back to one of our, you know, just musky legends, Tony Rizzo.
Yep.
And that I think he based all of his books around is water temperature. Like keeping track of your water temperature.
Huge.
Is just critical.
Huge.
Like in all other things and, you know, in there too, but water temperature is really important because these fish, everything is changing with your, you know, as the light changes, as it increases or decreases, and as that water temperature increases and decreases, things change. And like, you know, it may be June, but if that water temperature is what it might be in mid-May, you know, everything's different. You can't fish like you're in mid-June when it's, you know,
fact.
Water temperature, you know. So again, I'll end it with that. But yeah, water the temp would be one
you
thing.
Know.
Wow, guys, Stephen Paul Thank with the you. Voice. Oh my God.
That's my 1980s PSA, the more you know. But it's a fact, man. I was sitting here. What was it? Was it like Transformers or G.I. Joe? Where they're talking like knowledge is power or what was that?
Oh yeah. Knowledge is power. Dude, that is on the back of Crankbait Secrets. That's like
it in is.
Joe's, like, I think he's holding up a bass or something. And I actually, in my vlog coming up, I have a vlog coming up on Crankbaits this week.
Absolutely.
And I have a picture of the Bible in there.
Crankbait Joe Secrets. Booker's Crankbait Secrets, the NIV version. On to the next question is Wes. Wes says, I have a question for Steve and Chaz. Well, you came to the right place, Wes.
Sweet.
Chaz, I know you only fish Joe Booker lures, so what are your top 5 Joe Booker musky lures? Steven, I know you fish other brands, so what are your top 5 lures that are non-Joe Booker lures, and why?
Hell yeah.
Go for it. What's your top 5 JBOs?
All right. First thing, let's talk blades. I mean, I've 700 Booker Tail Tinsel. Mm-hmm. That has produced my biggest Wisconsin muskies to date in years and years. 700, the 500. So that's number 2, the 500 Bookertail Tinsel. I'm a big fan of the tinsel these days.
Absolutely.
I fish the other different versions, of course, the tin box, the actual buck hair. But the 500, 700 tinsel would be 1 and 2. Top Raider, obviously, number 3. I'm going to pick, I've got 2 left, huh? So, okay, hang on, though. So I've got 500, 700 tinsels, Top Raider's 3. 4 would be, I'm going to pick, because I've got 2 options here, and I know I've got 2 other things to go with.
You
got to
throw one of them in there.
Well, I'm going to go with, although I'm going to end up going with, I'm going to pick the 7-inch shallow raider for my mid-range minnow bait. I'm going to pick the slab 7-inch shallow raider, straight model.
Mm-hmm.
is a just a killer, and that's what my vlog is coming up on, is the 7-inch straight model. And then number five, and I'm really having a trouble, Wes, making this decision. If I had to pick right now five lures, it's going to be in between a straight model baby DR or a regular 8-inch DR. And I think from a fish production standpoint, I hate to say it, like, I've caught bigger fish on the 8-inch, like the true tankers. Mm-hmm. But if I'm talking like for clients producing wise, and if you're listening to this, Wes, and you're saying, I want to produce fish, you know, big and small, but the 6-inch baby DR straight model in Fire Tiger is like probably one of my most ridiculous money baits. Okay, I'm out.
Got five. I gotta say, throw something in here. I'm just gonna say it, because how could you slight the glide rater that way?
I know, but
I'm mad. Come on. Me and you ridiculous things.
I know. You
things.
And I both.
Monsters.
Just monsters on that bait. I know.
But we'll move on. We'll save
surprised.
That. I know. We'll save that for another time. So my top five non-Joe Booker lures. If I'm talking like client production, or let's just forget client production. I'll just go straight with what I want. Suic. 10-inch Suic.
Man.
In walleye, I will thump your brains out all day long. Anybody, anywhere, on
weighted
that.
Weighted or regular?
Oh, wait till you see my mine are funky. But do you think I'm going to fish it straight out of the pack, baby? Mine
well, that's
all.
Why I want to know.
I can't
Wes,
say it
I'm
on the
asking
podcast.
Him what? Well, just give us a hint, man. Give us a little bit of a hint. Come on.
Okay.
Oh, come on,
man.
Is it
dude,
or not?
It okay.
Just tell
okay.
us if it's weighted.
It is somewhat weighted. Anyway,
somewhat weighted.
It's not factory.
Okay, it's weighted.
It's not factory weighted though. So Suic.
Well, I know that.
In walleye. goodness, man. Oh, non-Booker. I fish so many Bookers, so it's sort of tough. Tipsy gliders made by a dude named Aaron out of Green Bay. They are a glide bait that weighs about a pound.
Well, there you go.
They're about 6 inches long and weigh a pound. They're super wow. heavy gliders. Now, for me, for winter fishing, when I'm fishing in January and February, it's a big slow and low bait. I'll say this, and it's a shameless plug, but it's become a fact, because I nailed a really nice one on it the other day. These Junior Inlines, which are a sponsor of the podcast. I know it sounds ridiculous.
Hey, cool.
But
that's number three for you now.
Number three, he's making – what he's doing, though, he's making – instead of flashaboo, he's doing rubber skirts, right? And the cool thing about those rubber skirts is they're heavier. And so
that's cool. Yeah.
It's like a super good slow rolling bucktail. So that's like, as of right now, hot for me. Dude, I got to go with the Bulldog. I mean, when
what size? What kind? Like shallow or regular?
I throw a regular Mag Dog all the time.
Okay.
It's one of those things, man. Shocking.
Now, do you shrink wrap your hooks or no? Yes, no. What do you do with the hooks?
What shrink? What do you mean, to get them straight out or something? No, I just
You leave them just dangle.
I bury the back one. I leave the front one dangle. I don't like Pro Dogs with the top hook. I actually have a.
Oh, I cut all those off.
Dude, a billion of those, and I got some people like, oh, you go back and forth. So just a whatever.
I think I caught one muskie ever on the top hook.
I missed about six. When those first came out, all of them had that top hook.
They mess it up, yes.
But people will go back and forth with that all day. So that's four. It's tough because everybody thinks I don't throw like – I mean, I throw way too many – crane bait, period. That it just came into my head. Crane 206 all day long.
Ooh, nice.
So
nice.
I was thinking I throw a lot of Booker baits, but – the Crane, like I said, fishing with Bill Crane as a kid and all this stuff, and man, it's a producer.
Yeah, history,
so,
yep.
Yeah,
yep.
But those are stud baits, man. Good, that's a fun question.
All right, man.
What do we got here? Fishing.
Let's keep going. Yeah.
All right.
This would be good for us.
We got to get through some.
Yeah.
We're trying to move here. Brian L. How do you utilize a bucktail on a southern reservoir with no weeds? I always connect bucktails with fishing in and around weeds. Are there more robust? Or, what? Hold on, man. I went brain dead. He says, I always connect bucktails with fishing in and around weeds. Are they more robust than that? Okay, I see what he's saying. Are they more useful than just fishing around weeds?
And so you got the southern connection, well, for sure. So you go first.
Okay, do you want to?
But then I can chime in here.
You're going to chime in because mud's mud. That's it.
Rock is rock.
Rock is rock.
Open water is open water.
Yes, sir. So here's the deal. When we're talking southern reservoirs, where you're talking Cave Run, you're talking Pennsylvania, wherever you're talking, outside of what I call the musky golden circle, where it's like they own musky. You know, you Wisconsin, Minnesota, Canada guys, you know, they sort of own the sport as far as everything. So everything else is lumped in as southern. You know what I'm saying? And that's not a negative.
Yeah,
it's south of Wisconsin, so I'm trying to cover as much as I can.
We kind of call it southern waters.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, and I've got a lot of Pennsylvania guys all through this region.
Pennsylvania is exploding right now. Pennsylvania's musky nuts.
It's getting musky nuts, and they got good.
And
fish.
They're all nice guys. They're all nice guys, and they're always willing to say hello. Anyway, okay.
Anyway, the deal with this is, forget everything that you've ever read about musky fishing. Period. Throw it out the window. So here's the deal with bucktails. I do best with bucktails in open water, right around pelagic bait schools and things of that nature. So if we're taking weeds out of the picture, Brian, say forget weeds. How can I use a bucktail outside of a weed bed on any reservoir or body of water? So I'm going to fish it over the flats just like I would over the weeds, burn it in there, you know, slow roll it, whatever. Muskies will lay on sand in Canada. They'll lay on sand and mud in the south or wherever else. They'll do the same thing. So yes, you can run it over just open sand flats, open mud flats. Bucktails are atrociously good in open water casting situations.
Well, they're atrociously versatile, man. Like, yeah, you're getting at it. You're digging away at this. Yeah, and they're so versatile.
Open water, throwing them at rocks. The thing that I'll tell you that's deadlier than anything, if we're talking a southern reservoir, whether it be Cave Run, I'm guessing, is get a slot master on there, change the blades out with like a 700 Bukertail, a 700 Indiana blade and stuff, and learn how to drop shot. If you want to tear some fish up next to standing timber, there's no weeds, but if you want to tear fish up out of timber, learn how to drop shot like a bass fisherman does with a slot master, a safety pin spinner bait. So whether it be the inline bucktail or any blade bait, you've got so much versatility there. Forget the weeds. I mean, I'll go. It's me and you just
going. No, Steven, I gotta call you out on this. Just not call you out, but like just like explain to the listeners, because I think what you're talking about is really important and really cool. But a lot of folks may not. What do you explain a little bit more about what you mean by drop? Because I know as a bass fisherman, what you mean by drop shot. What do you mean by drop shot a slot master? That's a really neat idea you're talking about. I think we need to discuss that.
It's the same. I will fish. It's funny. It parlays into the last question we're talking. We're talking about bulldogs, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the spring, I will fish a slot master in the same methodology I'd fish a bulldog. Rip paws. Rip paws. Rip paws. And so you can rip a spinner bait like that where it's ripping through the water and it's falling, or drop shotting where I'm lifting the rod tip and letting it flutter down. You know, up and down in almost a jigging fashion. And sometimes into that tight timber, just dropping at the end of the stuff. So, you know, that's sort of what I categorize that as, like, you know, it doesn't have to be a straight retrieve bait. And it's just deadly around timber, and it's deadly around rocks and other types of cover. And so,
well, I think what you're saying too is neat, that like all of these lures that have traditional retrieves, you don't need to retrieve any of them traditionally at a given point in time. You can, you know, experiment, get out of your comfort zone with all of these lures. And I think, like, I guess, I don't know, I'm just going to ramble here for a second, but like just getting on, like, I'm not even going to ramble. I'm just talking. We're talking a bucktail and how versatile it is. You can do so many different things. I love your idea with like ripping a spinnerbait. Like, these are things that are not conventional, but they produce fish, right?
Yeah.
It's like,
you just got to make them, you know. And one thing, Brian, I'll say is this, you know, he's asking how to utilize a bucktail. One thing I'll say is this: if there's no weeds yet where you're fishing, or there's no weeds at all, start looking at crankbaits. That's my biggest thing, is like, bucktails work in the south, but they don't work much. There's certain times of the year. So if you're running into like a standstill, like, oh, there's no weeds, so I don't really know what to do, get into some crankbaits, get into a crane bait, get into a 5-inch shallow raider. And I think that's going to sort you out more so than trying to utilize a bucktail.
Can I even say one more thing when it comes to bucktails, Stephen? Because, again, this is a guideism that you and I share, is that everybody throws this stuff.
Yes.
And there's a lot of, you know, I think there's a, and I love asking people in seminars, okay, raise your hand if you caught 5 muskies this year on the figure eight.
Right.
Everybody's raising their hand. Okay, keep your hand up if you caught 10 muskies figure eight. You know, half the hands go down, get half the crowd. Raise your hand, and there's always one guy with his hand up. You know,
no matter what. Yeah.
But yeah, he's like, you know, the badass, which is awesome. I'm sure he is, or she. But I guess what I'm getting at is, you know, when we're talking blades and bucktails is like per the original question of some sort, I just wanted to say this, like, please don't ever forget that to me as a guide, what truly separates those, I guess there's like, there is a line of like, who's good and who's not.
Yeah.
And it is figure eight skills, man. Yeah. Like, is everybody throws the damn things, whether it, like you're talking crankbaits, don't forget about crankbaits in the Southern Belt. But man, people get real about focusing on the figure eight and how deadly that is, because I guess rant over. And
no, you're
I remember,
right. Dude.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I'm going on a tangent right now, I guess, but
no,
you know,
I mean,
just,
it's one thing. I'll even tell you this, like at least on video, I watch it, and it's don't get big headed. I watch you because your figure eights are better than mine. That's guide to guide. Like I've stolen.
I don't know. If I
know.
Believe
no,
that.
It's a,
I'm not
no, it's a truth.
At all. I don't
no,
know
it's
I
a truth. It's
all.
A fact though, because like, you know, from years of watching you fish with Joe and stuff, a lot of that is I've stole a lot of these moves from you, and I'm not kissing your ass or anything, but it's like what we're always talking on the podcast. You got to like self like reflect a little bit.
Well,
and it's just
okay,
like,
so Stephen, let me
and
say
I'll
this
see
thing,
it, and I'll see
really
I'll
go,
what. Well, but what I'll say, like what I'm,
okay,
what I'm,
yeah.
what I'm getting at is, I know, but what I was getting at is like, it's producing, it's being able to like look at what you're doing and go, okay, that guy's better than me, and steal from him.
I don't know if I agree with that, but I'm going to say this though. I'm going to say that there was a time though when I think I was like 5. This is going to be for me. Mm-hmm. I who cares? I was filming with Joe at this point for like year 5. And I said, Joe, and I just think I remember exactly where I was. I said, Joe, what do you think of my figure eight?
Right.
And we're good buddies.
Yeah,
like we've
I've
been
done
filming
this
together for 5 years. Right. And I'm like, what do you think? And he said, dude, your figure eight. He's dude. It's great. You got a great figure eight, man.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I looked at him. I said, I literally stopped the film for a sec. I'm like, Joe, seriously, can you tear me apart, please? Like, I really want a no bullshit. Can I say bullshit on air? I want a no
bullshit.
Like,
yes, apparently.
Read on how I figure eight. And he goes and he looks at me and he says, okay, take a cast. And like, and it's like, oh boy. Okay. So JB's now, he's actually,
yeah, he's
really
paying
just
attention.
Me.
Yeah.
And which is funny. Cause like, you know what he looks like when he really is like, he dials in on you.
Oh, yeah.
And he gets those eyes. He looks at you and he's like, well, it's good, but, and I'm like, sweet. Okay,
yeah.
Here we go.
Learn
now
something.
I got Joe Bucher tweaking me. And I always, and ever since that moment, because I remember when he like broke down my figure, and I thought I think I was pretty good at that point, but I wasn't, and I still am. Like, I think, I always think there's improvement in every aspect of this game. And I'm sorry, again, going on a rant right now, but he looked at me and he started tearing me apart a little bit. And he started saying, you can improve on this, you can improve on that, you can improve on this. Believe me how thankful I was. And since that time, I asked Joe continuously. It's become like a thing. Is tweak Joe, will you please tweak me? How can I improve? Look at me. Watch me.
Dude, here's the thing. You're saying that and literally I just thought of something. I'm just prattling on air.
Yeah.
We need to like do something with listeners. Like we need to do that.
Okay, where
school.
Are you going with this? I
we need
love
to like
this.
Do
this
the school. Like either we get Joe or me or you, because it's not fair. Because like me and you've been tweaked by Joe Bucher. We got to put something together, like where we can get some of our listeners together on a body of water.
I don't want to throw this out there too soon, and I, you know, but, I've been throwing around this idea, and I think that, and Joe honestly was pushing me on this, and I think that if you and me and Joe and Tyler and is, you know, I was thinking about doing some kind of school this fall.
We should. We should. We'll
in
talk
some
about,
way.
We'll talk about it off air. Sorry. Folks, if you don't think me and Chaz are just on here having fun, I bet you, what you, dude, I did this thing. I literally, we're standing Monstro, right? We're standing, and I waited for that conversation because I've not spent as much time on the boat as you have. And it's like day four, and I said, "What would you do differently if you were me?" The same, you know, the same question, and that's a tough one. I know exactly where you're coming from because getting that advice is huge, and I'm not trying to get off on a tangent, but I know that feeling of what you're like, what do I fix? But by the way, you know what I stole from you, Chaz, by the way? Is you're right-handed, which is fine, but it's on the backhand. My least dominant side, I actually filmed myself and realized my outside turns on my non-dominant side were smaller.
Interesting.
I was tightening up, and that's like the thing of like you're talking about really dialed in and fixing things. Man, it changed my world because I watched you a bunch in videos. I went, you're really even on both sides. So, and this is before me and you were even friends. I filmed myself for hours, and I realized on my backside, on my non-dominant, on my right-hand side, it was tighter than it was on my dominant left side.
Interesting.
I don't,
dude. You're getting my mind, Joe. I know we're going on a tangent.
Oh, now, no, we got to keep going. Sorry, everybody. Right, we're down the big rabbit hole.
I'm just saying, like, I've studied Joe. All right, let's go.
All right, Casey asks, big fan of the podcast. What's the best option for fishing a heavily pressured lake? Casey, crankbaits. Casey, crankbaits. Again, crankbaits. 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 What do you have to say, Chaz?
Wow, that's a really cool question. Because I'm thinking, boy, what was the question again? What's your best?
What's the best option for fishing a heavily pressured lake? I said crankbaits like 70 times. What do you think?
I'm going to say, for me, my biggest, and I really shouldn't, God, I don't even want to, I mean, everybody already knows it, but I just hate saying it because I don't want to give away all my secrets, but I'll give it away for listeners.
Yeah.
My biggest secret, and it's funny because it's been, I mean, Joe was our pioneer of the moon secrets.
Yeah.
My biggest secret, I mean, for me, no matter what bait, is paying attention to the moon on a very religious level. Like I'm not, right. I mean, everything is planned around the damn moon. And although it doesn't, I mean, obviously the moon is not everything. I mean, I think we would both agree, like local weather is probably your most dominant, predictor of musky activity in some way, shape, or form. You know, frontal activity is, you know, bar none, like for me at least, like my producer of, but when I'm on pressured water, I am very, very particular about where I am, what spots I'm fishing, and what time I'm fishing them. It is calculated. Do not think for a second, if you're watching any video that I'm, any single musky video that you watch, everything. I mean, I don't sound like Mr. like, you know, James Bond here or something, but in all seriousness, everything is, at least I try to, everything's calculated because I believe in it.
Right.
And I think that your majority of people out there, I mean, I think it's on the up now with musky fishermen intelligence ones and musky lady fishermen intelligence, but like, I mean, the moon is, I mean, I don't think people quite grasp it all the way yet. I used to know from a guiding perspective, the majority of people I bring out still do not grasp the realism of success and timing. Timing is everything. Do not be late to the dance.
Do you know what? I was throwing out my sage-like advice of saying crankbaits repeatedly, but you know what Booker would say? Go at night.
Oh, that was the other thing. Yes, night fishing.
Go at night if it's heavy pressure.
I've had some insomnia lately. I've been dreaming about one particular spot every night.
I love it.
No, I have. I mean, in my mind last night, it was night, I don't even know what day it is, but there was, I keep dreaming about this one spot and like, oh my God, I keep thinking about night fishing it more and more this year. Like I'm asking myself, why don't I night fish this spot more? Mm-hmm. Like if pressure picks up, I'm getting paranoid because I'm like, oh man, like my favorite spots, like what if they get more pressure this year? Or what if this and that? I'm like, I'm thinking about, okay, I got a night fish now more than ever. I'm like, I'm going nuts.
Everybody's going nuts, man. Oh, you know, but hey, at least you're going nuts thinking musky. So got one from Kyle. Dude, and this is embarrassing. I did this on the last podcast with Joe. I'm so bad with these French names. So Kyle says, I fish Lac Vieux, V-I-E-U-X.
Oh, Lac Vieux d'Azur?
Lac Vieux d'Isère. See, I pronounced it perfectly, folks. Lac Vieux d'Isère.
Oh, that was beautiful.
In Vilas County.
I took French in high school. Oh, I took French in high school, so I'm...
I did a lot of Frenching in high school. So anyway, Kyle says, I fish Lac Vieux d'Isère in Vilas County twice a year. When I'm fishing out, I use a 7-inch shallow rate around schools of perch, and perch seem to follow the lure in. I walk the lure around the schools of perch and around the boat for a period of time, hoping to see a muskie that would show up behind one of these perch. Chaz, do you ever see this at times, and have you ever fished Lac Vieux d'Isère, and do you see muskies in this situation where perch are following lures and muskies are not showing up?
I have, first of all, no matter where you are, if you're on LVD, if you're on... you know, Three Lakes chain, when I've got perch bumping my bucktails and bumping my crankbaits, like, and they're aggressive, I'm always pretty happy. Although I will say that when that's happening, I don't always have muskies hitting, oddly. When the perch are like aggressive enough to like come out of their hiding places and follow lures, mm-hmm. I seem to not be having aggressive muskies following. Although I know I'm like on the bait fish, and sometimes it's not a bad thing. I just, first of all, when I, Steven, I'd be curious to hear your option, your thoughts on that. Like, when I got perch bumping my lures, I'm like racking my brain right now. I haven't remembered like having muskies come out of nowhere and just annihilate things, but I know that I'm in the right place. And that's like an important like realization to have.
We have straight up perch down here. Same perch mm-hmm. you got. And what I've found, and I know exactly what you're talking about. Like, here comes a perch behind it. Here's like a 7-inch bait with a 9-inch perch behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And I might be wrong on this, and I'm just sort of spitballing here. But what
I've always thought,
if they're coming out and they're aggressive, what I do is I try to move away from that to like the next major element. So let's say I got perch following me out of a weed bed.
I
right?
agree with you. Yes.
Like, if these perch are ballsy enough to come out of the weeds and follow a bait, I go, they're not scared enough.
So, I don't think there's anything there that's
there's
scaring
nothing
them,
there. So I'll move.
We all know.
I'll move, they lay low. I'll move to like the drop off that's near that and check it out. Now, has that worked every time? No, but it's worked a few times. So,
but because you know those muskies are near those frickin' perch, and you got to kind of check, like, you know, obviously secondary spots A, B, and or B, C, and D instead of spot A,
right?
Because I think you're absolutely right, and I've seen this. It doesn't matter if you're ice fishing and a predator comes in, bluegills lay low. You know, they just freaking disappear. If you are walleye fishing and a muskie comes in, that freaking bite dies. So when you see freaking perch following, I think you're in obviously the right spot, but I'm not necessarily like, you know, going to put money on
the right
that muskie.
Spot.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, there's a muskie around, but that might not be where those perch are just going crazy.
Man, if I can smell a muskie when I pull into a weed bed, I know those perch can.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I got to say, I have fished Lac Vieux d'Isère for many years. And I second your affinity to the 7-inch shallow red. I think it's an awesome lure. So what else was the LVD question on the perch and what do you do around perch?
I think
we kind of answered it.
Yeah,
I think
he's wanting to know like, that, you know, and just wanted to know if you fish that body of water and if you've seen the same thing up there. So, yeah, I mean.
I do, and I think LVD is a really neat body of water. And I think it's one of those, as you and I you know, seem to be creative guys, it's a body of water where you got to be creative to score because of the weed scenario out there, and it's big water. It's a neat body of water. So I'll leave it
there. Yeah, absolutely. Nathan, we got a follow-up question. Nathan asked a question on a previous podcast, and he said, I really didn't mention the fact that I do that I'm a bank fisherman. I don't have a boat currently, and the places that I'm fishing are really not boatable. And he had mentioned in his previous, if I remember correctly, that he's having problems hooking up. And okay. He says, you know, he's focusing his efforts towards like windblown shorelines, areas that have drop-offs and flats while bank fishing. And he said, I'm watching my warm and cold fronts, you know, and deciding based upon the wind where I should be looking at and what I should be fishing. He says, I like to think that I have a good technique. I can definitely work lures in a good fashion. He said, I just don't know where the fish are. He said, what can you do for somebody that is a bank fisherman to help them dial in and find active muskies on good spots?
I have an initial thought. I'm curious what you think of this.
Yeah, lay it on.
I mean, and this is a Joeism that I thought was really neat, and I'm going to throw this out there. And sorry, I guess I'll just throw this out there. That I guess when I asked Joe, you know, I said, Joe, what are your top priorities when you're breaking a body of water down, a new body of water? I don't care if you're a boat fisherman or a bank fisherman, which is, I think, important to note. It doesn't matter what you're doing. Where are the fish? I got great technique. And Joe's first thing that he said that I think really stands out, and I'll just open it up with this, is main lake points. Fish relate to points. And so, you know, I think just looking at your body of water, I guess from that comment, is look at your body of water from a Google Maps perspective, a mm-hmm. bird's eye view, and say, where are the most, I mean, based on the time of year, where are the locations you would predict the prey and predators to be holding and why? And it's like, I think Stephen, you and I have done a really good job of this in talking about the science behind muskie catching. Yeah. It's not just like, you know, the technique is there in this scenario, but where are they? And it's a scientific, it's an ecosystem question. And so I think you've got to look more, you know, bird's eye view on this. On like, what are the water temperatures? I'll stop talking now.
No,
what are the
man.
Water temperatures? What time of year is it? Where are these fish? You know, we talked about this earlier in the podcast, taking notes on catches and successes, even if it's a northern pike. If you're a muskie angler out there or you catch a big pike, that's a win too, man. That's a predator. You know, you're in the right spot. What do you think?
Dude, my thing is this, is like, if he's struggling as a bank fisherman, right, and he's just mm-hmm. having problems finding fish, one thing you got to at least think about is being mobile, okay? You know, if we're fishing from the bank, and there's some bodies of water, that's all you can do. They're so tight, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? Streams,
yeah.
lakes, and stuff like that. So it's not like, oh, this guy can't, I mean, get mobile. If I was in like your neck of the woods and stuff like that, let's say he's up north, he didn't specify, but let's say he's up north, whatever. Man, getting a pair of waders and get out in the weeds and get out to the
edges.
Now
that changes everything. You get a pair of waders, man, you're another world.
Yeah, you're another world. So, you know, be mobile. The thing is this, is, I mean, you've got to sort of, like you said, I love Google Earth for figuring things out. Also, too, even if you don't have a boat, you can still have charts. Get the Navionics app. It's like $10 on your smartphone. It's full of maps. Actually, I used
it's amazing.
It. Dude, it I just amazing. Used it in yes. my new mapping video I just put on the app on the 101 section.
I can't wait to see this.
But it's the computer version of the Navionics app, which you can get for free on a desktop. You can actually look at the chart.
Awesome,
so there's a lot of free info out there. So understand the structure and the build. Like you said, even if you're not in a boat, you should understand what's going on structurally there. So do your research on that. Figure out the structure. Stay mobile. That's
well,
the
I
thing.
Was going to say one last thing. Your stay mobile point is so critical, Stephen, mm-hmm. because you think about, you know, which is actually baffling. So let's say, I don't know, think about the muskies per acre, and just to dial in the yeah. mobile standpoint, is if you have a 400 acre body of water and like you have a 0.5 muskie per acre is pretty much insane,
yeah,
and that is it's almost doesn't even exist. But if you had a 0.5 muskie per acre, I mean, obviously 400 acres, you're going to be at 200 adult muskies in the lake, let's yeah. say, hypothetically speaking. And I mean, just you think about 400 acres, this is a decent sized body of water.
It's a body of water, yeah.
I mean, and they could be suspended. They're all over the place. So when you're casting, I mean, I guess it just makes me realize like you have to be mobile because there's not a lot of these big frickin' fish around. You've got to cover water. As a bank fisherman, that's tough. But,
and dude, the thing is this is like, if you think about having success in other bank fishing, right? If when I go up here to the Smokies and I've lost my, it's rare that I do it, but when I lose my mind, I say I'm going to go trout fishing. When we come back, like me and my wife go wading these streams, we've mm-hmm. walked forever.
Oh, like, you have to, right? It feels, to get to the next spot where it's going to be high percentage.
It is a beating of the week. You were just exhausted. We were talking about last time when we came back, we were exhausted because it's like, how much did we walk wading around, you know, covering ground? So, you know, don't be a couch potato, you know, get out there you got to hoof
so.
It.
Which is neat to like, I mean, if that's your thing, if you're bank fishing, you're going to be burning calories and you're going to be cut. You got to cover water to do it right.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, we got two more, Chaz. You ready?
All right, let's do it.
Carl
do it.
Says, we sort of talked about this already, but we'll cover it. Carl says, if you guys can't go to Canada this year, what are your plans?
Ooh. I mean, my plan, I mean, it's easy, and I'll just recap really, yep. I'll try to be brief, but each year, Carl, I have like, I just, my lake exes, I'll say each year, I'll say minimally, I have 5 or 6 different ideas. And sometimes I base this on, hey man, we got out of our comfort zone last year and we found a body of water that we really liked and it was totally new. What exists around that now yeah. that we didn't even know existed? And we start diving in, and before you know it, my buddies and I are throwing goofy stats from the DNR around at each other, and we are just getting so fired up about local fishing in our neck of the woods yeah. and how many cool things exist. So I will miss Canada if we can't go, but let me tell you, we are going to have all kinds of cool stuff going on if we cannot.
Dude, absolutely. So. And you know, it's one of those things, if you can't go to Canada, just figure out something that's worth your time. I have promised myself as a motivator that I will learn something. That's it.
And dare I throw this name out there, Tom Gelb.
Tom Gelb.
Who said, look, if I'm gonna chase the biggest fish that swims, I'm gonna look in my backyard.
Absolutely, man.
And
yeah, that's a fact.
He has caught some of the biggest muskies to come out of Vilas County in the last 50 years, all from lakes that literally he may or may live on.
Dude,
so,
and a great segue question on that. Henry says, Chaz, Steve, love the podcast. What new things do you guys plan on trying for the 2020 season?
Ooh, wow. That's a.
What are you doing new?
Well, I do have some season 4 like secrets that I can't reveal yet. As far as like, I got mm-hmm. a couple things I've wanted to try for a long time. But what am I doing new this year? I would say bottom line, and I think it's actually kind of parlaying to that last question, if that even uses the word correctly. Yeah. Is exploring new water. I think one of the biggest people ask me, like, hey, Chaz, you had a great 2019. What led to your success? And it was my, you know, I think the biggest reason for my success last year was having the balls to get off mm-hmm. my bodies of water that I was confident in, and to get on some new stuff that I had to really use my skills on and get out of my comfort zone. And because I stuck to it, I found success. So if you're going to ask me, what am I doing in 2020? It's exploring new water, pushing myself. And that's something that Joe, by the way, has pushed me to do for years.
Yeah.
He's get off your damn bodies of water that produce fish for you and explore. So yeah. I'm over and out on that one. That's what I'm doing this year, trying to find new water.
Yeah, absolutely. I would think anything. I actually mentioned it to you. The one thing I'm focused on and I've been doing already is – I'll give up a big secret. Just we'll wrap the podcast on, but it's a huge secret I've been working on. I'm going to perfect it this year, is picking up weak follows on my fly rod.
Oh, you told me about that. Oh my God, dude, that's so cool.
And so I've noticed these fish that come in that aren't like exceptionally hot, like they don't stick in the 8 and stuff. I've been picking up some low 40s on my fly rod as a cast back. So,
oh, that's so cool, Steven.
You know, hot fish, I'm hitting them with the JB Rattler, or I'm hitting with a Downsize or a Poseidon or something different.
And who throws a fly at them? No one.
Nobody. And so what I've done is I've got a 10-weight fly rod there on the boat with a white streamer or a black streamer, depending on what the conditions are. And I've been picking them up, fish that are not coming into the 8 hot and just sort of turning off. I've been picking them up on the fly. So what I'm going to try to perfect for the 2020 season is using a fly as a castback presentation. That's sort of my goal for this year, and see if I can't just sort of break that new ground.
I'm going to throw that into one of my goals for the year, man.
I'm having fun with it. I mean, I've caught some nice fish. I've caught some 40-inchers. My biggest on a throwback so far is a 44. And
Tank.
That's a tank on a 10-weight fly rod, which is a pretty good hefty fly rod. But that's sort of like my thing is like, is that a viable option? Is it as strong as, like, you know, we've been touting like rattle traps as a throwback. We've been trout, you know, like what's this? And sort of that's my goal. If you really want, I mean, that's what I'm thinking in my own head is like, can I perfect a fly presentation as a throwback? So that's what I'm
absolutely
planning on doing.
And I got to say, as I've been dreaming, man, I've been talking, you know, I got this, you know, I haven't been sleeping that great during this whole pandemic, honestly, man, I've been, you know, here and there on the sleep thing, and I've been dreaming about certain spots.
Yeah.
And I keep thinking about these spots at night, man. I don't know why. I don't know why my dreams are bringing me to night fishing. I think that it's just, it's that's where my mind is at right now for 2020. I'm getting weird.
Absolutely.
And I'm thinking about night fishing more than I did in 19. And I'm thinking about night fishing for some reason. I can't say why exactly, but it's just tweaking me, man.
He's feeling about it. Well, guys, I'll tell you, keep your chins up out there. Hopefully we'll have some upswings on some more water opening up and things getting normal.
And keep the questions. I know I'm speaking for Joe and Tyler and both of us, but keep the questions coming. This is awesome. I look forward to these podcasts with Steven so much. We're always, you know, throwing times around and where we're going to film and this and that. Yep. But man, when we get started talking here, I absolutely love this. And this has made the quarantine, hopefully for all of us, so much more enjoyable. And, you know, we're learning, we're talking, we got all this great you know, response and questions from all of our listeners out there, which is just and people are having success and sharing their success stories. It's so awesome, Steven.
Absolutely.
So, you know,
dude, thank you so much. We'll see you guys next week. Me and Chaz will be back here again, hopefully answer more questions for you. Keep your chins up, get your gear ready, sharpen your hooks, keep the Pepsis flowing. We're going to be catching some muskies here this year. Talk to you later, folks.
The Muskie 360 Podcast is brought to you by Yeti, built for the wild, Evinrude E-Tech Outboards, Joe Bucher Outdoors, the number one name in Big Fish products, and The Muskie Shop.